be new now, all you positive heads out there. It's so good to be back with you as always. If you're new to this podcast, of course, we are super happy to have you here, and we just ask that you bring an open mind and heart to your listening experience and to be prepared to explore vantage points that I'm convinced will help shift or solidify your current understanding of the ultimate nature of reality. While listening, you'll be exposed to inspiring, empowering, and unifying perspectives that I'm highly confident will yield stellar results in your life if you opt to try them on for size. Also, I'm super, super happy to announce that we have officially launched our new late-night style, consciousness-elevating video variety talk show, Optimistic, which features live visionary artists, soul-share interviews, retreat guests that come here to the Mystic Manor to join me and the interviewee on the stage during the last night of their stay, their week-long stay, as well as the show concluding with live musical performances. We're going to be releasing episodes every other Sunday at 11:11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and you can go to optimistic.tv, that's spelled OptimysticTV, to join our watch party for each future episode's release or to check out past episodes. We're originally going to be releasing Optimistic episodes every Sunday. However, as a community, following the flow of what is wanting to come through in these unique and unprecedented times with so many of our soul family stuck at home craving connection, we have decided to move to releasing episodes every other Sunday so that those of us here on the production team at the Mystic Manor can free up some time and energy to help create virtual community for all of you P-heads out there. And we are accomplishing that aim by launching our new Mystic Manor online retreat and play shops re-membership program. It's going to entail live play shops twice daily, 7 days a week, behind the scenes footage here at the Mystic Manor each day, access to a Facebook group where we do short interactive 1 minute video challenges and reflect back to each other about our experiences, live Q&As with me and some of the other facilitators, and more. It's a super, super robust program. It's facilitated by over a dozen of us here at the Mystic Manor, and in an effort to support all you P-heads out there stuck at home craving connection, for a limited time, it is going to be totally free to sign up on our Patreon page, which is linked at optimistic.tv. Just be sure to fill out the form link that's located at the top of our About section on Patreon so we can make sure you have access. Otherwise, we're super excited to have you join in all the magic with us that's happening here every single day at the Mystic Manor and to expand our community together. Here we grow. All right, all you positive heads, on this week's Soul Share episode, I'm very excited to have Rod Noble here with me on the show. Rod is a source energy healer, sound healer, shamanic practitioner, and energy intuitive who draws on his gifts of clairvoyance and energy medicine to gain insight on his clients' highest alignment, as well as the author of the new book, A Soul Hacker's Guide to Awakening, which covers the 14 quantum leaps of consciousness to help hack your soul evolution. Hello there, Rod. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Hello. Thank you, Brandon. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Looking forward to this. Our mutual friend, Monica, a.k.a. Magica Ohm, recommended that we connect, and she's actually the first musical guest on the new show, Optimistic, which people, you can check out at optimistic.tv, you know, the late night style variety show. And her and Vajra, my dear friend, the visionary artist, actually met on episode one of Optimistic and now are married as a result. So she is full of magic, as is he. So when she said, look, you got to connect with my friend Rod, he's incredible and will be a great, you know, contribution to the podcast, I was, you know, didn't think twice, and here we are.
Well, I appreciate that. They're both very talented people.
Yes, they certainly, and just amazing souls to boot. So I look forward to diving in with you here, and I'm going to start, Rod, at the same place I always like to start, and that is this predictable opening question. You're in an elevator. The woman next to you looks over, says, what's your passion? You have 10 floors to answer. What do you say?
What's my passion? Spirituality, waking up as many people in this world as I possibly can and bringing them along with me on this great ride to awakening.
I'm with that, man. That is definitely my passion as well. Well, let's talk about how you ended up on that elevator, shall we? You know, maybe a little bit of your backstory, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, I grew up out in the country in Missouri, and this was way before there were ayahuasca circles and shamans on the internet and things like that. You know, we're talking late 70s here, and, needless to say, there was a lot of bad programming around me. But the thing that really turned me around and expanded my consciousness more than anything else was a dosage of magic mushrooms. And
if I had a nickel for every time I heard that.
Yeah,
it's always magic mushrooms seem like the doorway, gateway for so many.
It sure was for me. And we actually grew them ourselves from a little kit we got out of High Times magazine.
I ordered that kit back in the day and didn't tend to it. I didn't tend to them as well as I should have, though. And they didn't quite turn out.
Oh, sorry to hear that. But yeah, we got lucky, I guess, because we certainly didn't know what we were doing. But you know, it worked, and it just opened my mind. Or around the same time, I started seeing the Carlos Castaneda books in the bookstore, and I started reading all of those, and that contributed to my growth. And you know, then Ram Dass came along, Joseph Chilton Pierce, Alan Watts, authors like that. Yep. You know, help me move forward. And it's just been this march forward with this kind of work ever since. And, I'm probably 35 years into this, and I just want to share the wisdom that I picked up over the years with as many people as I can. And that's why I wrote the book.
Cool. Well, let's jump into the book, shall we? A Soul Hacker's Guide to Awakening. Let's talk about, you've got 14 leaps of consciousness. That's a lot of ground to cover, it sounds like. Let's talk about it.
Well, the most important thing that I started out with is really the entire matrix of the ego. And, I'm not the first one to talk about this. People all over the world are going to the Amazon or going to the desert or wherever to have an ego death experience. So, I start out with how we're all players in this great cosmic play, and, how to navigate through our day-to-day life with this heavy burden of this ego self that we're carrying around, which really is like a phantom self because it's based on mostly illusionary concepts. Right. So I, the first chapter, I just really dig into that and how we can navigate this path with this heavy ego that we have and how to work with it with plant medicines and meditation and things like that.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So, let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, what is, obviously you have a, propensity in, fondness of plant medicines. I mean, do you find that is, do you find that is the, the easiest way for one to sort of, get themselves on the right path, or? Meditation is, or what is your thoughts on all that?
Well, that's a very, very good question, Brandon. And I was watching Terrence McKenna last night on a documentary, and I hadn't watched him in a long time. I actually had the pleasure of meeting him at the 1990 Telluride Mushroom Conference and spending some time with him. And him and I stayed in contact over the years, and I would mail in some things, and that's kind of a long story, but I was listening to him, and people would ask him, you know, like, can we have this ego death experience on meditation or by studying Indian spirituality and all these different things? And my answer to that is, you know, psychedelics really are the most efficient way to have an ego death experience. I've met people that have claimed to be meditators for 20 years, and they've had tons and tons of ego and self-importance and a lot of things like that, and had very little light coming from them. So a lot of these things don't really work unless you know, like, for instance, Paramahansa Yogananda had a guru. And in India, you have a guru that does the heavy lifting for you, that helps get a lot of this, you know, negative, toxic programming that's lodged deep in your ego out of you. But, you know, it took his teacher 10 years of work to do that. And a lot of us don't have 10 years. So really, you know, and I agree with Terrence McKenna on this, definitely psychedelics are the most efficient way to speed up your awakening process. And I agree with him 100% on that, if that answers your question.
Yeah, right. And so in your case, I mean, so, you know, the 14 quantum leaps of consciousness, you have a chapter on psilocybin mushrooms, right? I mean, is that sort of the top out of, okay, I think plant medicines are the quickest path. And I tend to agree with you. I mean, not to say someone can't have an experience through meditation or whatever, but, you know, plant medicines will literally blast you open. It's, I think of the Tool song that, you know, that he's talking about mushrooms actually. And it's, you know, he's sort of, in Tool fashion, for anyone who knows that band, who's been around for many, many, many years, you know, he's screaming over and over, prying open my third eye, talking about mushrooms. And that's what it does. It pries open your third eye. And it's not always gentle, and it can be intense, very, very intense. And so, you know, is mushrooms the number one medicine? I mean, a lot of people are using ayahuasca and things these days, and LSD, of course, has been around. And so, you know, what is your thoughts?
In my experience, the tryptamines, DMT included, have similar experiences, and actually even the visuals that I saw were very similar. Now, other people definitely would possibly disagree with me on this, but I don't get into like rating the plant medicines, because I think people have, you know, they're attracted to the different medicines for different reasons. I never had a strong desire to go to the Amazon and take ayahuasca. I was able to do ayahuasca in Malibu in 1995 for the first time, because the Shuar tribe came up there. But you know, I think it's great that there's all these different choices, actually, and I wouldn't say that mushrooms would be the best medicine. I think they're one of the best things that you can do to, you know, accelerate your soul evolution quickly. You know, even meditation, you know, if it's done right, or if you have someone working with you, you know, like a guru or a shaman or someone to coach you through the process, you can make a lot of, you know, advancement in just a couple of years. But definitely, you know, mushrooms is definitely at the top as to, you know, one of the best ones that you can do.
Yeah. What is, you know, I think it was it Terrence that also said, when you get the message, hang up the phone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really sort of get that too. It's like, for a lot of people, they get a lot out of these plant medicines, and then they continue to go back, and with diminishing returns. And like anything, you know, too much of anything can be bad for you too, in a sense, right? Like too much water will kill you, right? So it's the same kind of thing. It's like, I think sometimes people, you know, get the message and then they keep going back with diminishing returns. I know that's been my own experience with some of these tools. Mushrooms is a great example. When I first started out, you know, using mushrooms, it was really powerful, profound experiences. And, you know, in recent years, I just don't have that same type of experience, and quite the contrary, where it just doesn't resonate. Whereas one time I was the biggest proponent ever. And then it's like, okay, you've gotten what you can from it. And it's sort of like, you know, I've been kicked out of the garden, so to speak. And I come across a lot of people who also have that experience. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
Definitely. And that's another great question. You know, I like to think of it like this. You know, with my coaching, let's say I'm talking to a person that's never taken these plants before. What I try to get them to do is imagine that they've already taken them, let's say 50 or 100 times. Well, what kind of person do you want to be after 50 or 100 psychedelic journeys? You want to be transformed. Yep. So start imagining you're that person now. So you definitely, there comes a time where you need to focus on just your spiritual dimension, you know, and if you keep going back to these things, bad things can happen, you know. And another thing I see with maybe not so much, well, probably mushrooms too, but ayahuasca, is there needs to be more shamans like involved in some of these circles. Because yeah. I think some of the things that happen are a little bit irresponsible, you know?
Yeah, agreed.
Because, Brandon, what can happen in circles is we're all carrying thought forms. Our aura is a sponge. Mm-hmm. And we're bombarded with thought forms, energies, entities, all kinds of things. And when we go into these circles with other people, there needs to be some energy work done ahead of time, you know, to make sure that each participant in the ceremony is as clean as possible, their energy field.
Yeah.
And especially afterwards, too, because these things can actually move from one person to the other.
Yeah.
And they can get stuck on you, and they can cause, you know, a lot of problems during your journey. Now, I've watched, you know, some very good ayahuasca documentaries, you know, with legitimate shamans, you know, on Netflix or Amazon Prime, whatever. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are doing a very, very good job, the shamans, as to keeping the set and setting right.
Yeah,
you know, the energy clean and all that kind of thing. But I would warn, you know, anyone listening to this that's thinking about taking a heavy dose of ayahuasca with someone that's a little questionable,
yeah,
or, you know, does that's not a legitimate shaman, or that's brand new to this,
yeah,
or is doing this haphazardly, to maybe think twice, because some damage can be done. And there have been people that have actually gotten possessed by something and have had psychological problems for 2 or 3 years and come back, and
people have died, right? I mean, not often, it's not common, but yeah. I mean, you know, I know someone who, this person led ayahuasca ceremony, and he was a very gifted individual and gifted healer, and he healed my friend of back pain. It's how we originally met him. My friend who had back pain for 25 years, and he did a healing on him, and it went away 85% within, you know, 15 minutes. And so my friend became like, kind of, you know, like, wow, this guy is someone special. And he started spending a lot of time with him. And then this guy was like leading ayahuasca ceremony all the time, and then turned into, and then he realized, hold on, maybe this guy's taking it too far, where they were at a Tony Robbins convention, and the guy pulled out a flask in the front row and took a swig and tried to hand it over to my friend and says, "You want some? It's ayahuasca." Sitting in the front row of a convention, a Tony Robbins event.
Oh, my. And,
yeah. I mean, can you imagine? And needless to say, this guy ended up having, you know, sort of a break, you know, a bit of a psychological break and major issue. And but, you know, he also had demonstrated many incredible talents, including, you know, some pretty miraculous healing. And so he's a great example for me of, you know, taking something too far. And so you got to be really, really, you got to treat this stuff with much respect.
Yes, definitely. And I actually met someone that was messed up for several years. And now that person is helping people that have gotten onto the dark side of the soul or whatever, that have, you know, been involved in an irresponsible group and are having, you know, serious problems. So he's actually working with people like that. So that story actually has a pretty cool ending, but I'm sure some of these stories don't. So
yeah,
people really need to be responsible. These plants deliver a really powerful experience, and you have to be prepared for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about some of the other, you know, the 14 other tools, if you will, that, you know, hacks for your soul's evolution.
Okay. Which one would you like
to? You would, you know what? I'd love to hear about as many of them as you'd like to bring up.
Okay. Well, this, I'm going to get kind of arcane with you here a little bit. And this may seem like it's a little bit out there, but
we like out there around here.
I'm going to have some facts to back me up. So it may not be that out there after all. When I started writing the book, you know, some of this, I've been involved in this work for so long, some things started coming to me while I was writing, you know, almost like an automatic writing. And one of the things was that...
I'm sorry, if you could, just for anyone who doesn't know, automatic writing is sort of like a channeling type of phenomenon where something starts coming through you and you're sort of not controlling your own hand and handwriting, so to speak, right?
Exactly.
Yep. Okay.
So one of the things that kind of came to me when I was writing this is gypsies. The whole thing you see in the movies where gypsies look into a crystal ball to get answers about the, you know, the seeker that's sitting in front of them, their future, their destiny, or whatever they're seeking. And I thought, well, that's very, very shamanic, because shamans are the ultimate quantum field of consciousness hackers. You know, for centuries and centuries, they've gone into the quantum field of consciousness to find, you know, lost animals, missing people, you know, how to cure a certain illness for someone that's sick in the tribe, and on and on and on. And I was thinking that, where does that come from, looking into a crystal for answers? And then it started to come to me, well, all plant medicines are crystals. I mean, mescaline is a crystal. DMT is a crystal. Psilocybin is a crystal. And I'm thinking also that, you know, we use crystals now to transfer information, not only in the tech field, but people work with crystals all the time to, you know, program their intentions into crystals, things like that. So I started interviewing people, and I would talk to people that would take ayahuasca 1 week, and they would have the most fantastic experience that they've ever had. And then they went back to the same person, same setting, everything, you know, the very next week, and they had a terrible experience. And right. I'm thinking, okay, there has to be a reason for that. And what came to me when I was writing is that since these plant medicines are ultimately crystals. Something came in contact with the medicine between the first week and the second week.
Yeah.
That means that these plants, they hold information in the quantum field. So my theory is that, you know, the person that had the bad experience the second week, the ayahuasca got tainted somewhere. It could have been left in front of a violent movie, like a war movie. It could, someone's negative intention could have come in contact with it, like an argument or something, or it was set down somewhere where it, the quantum field of that crystal was corrupted. Does that make any sense?
It's an interesting theory. Although, you know, what comes up for me when you say it is, you know, we're pretty complex, multi-layered beings. And for me, it's like, I could be, okay, what does ayahuasca want to, the intelligence that is the plant, the entity, right? The spirit, if you will, as many people have experiences interacting with grandmother ayahuasca even. What does it want to work on with me this session, right? Think of class. One day I go to class and we work on, you know, how to do long division in math class. The next week we go back and it's like, okay, it's a different lesson. We're going to work on geometry, right? And so to me, what comes up is, yeah, I could show up one week and this is on the agenda for my soul to work on. Okay, I did that work. Okay, now there's more. And or maybe this time I show up and it's really meant to be light and, you know, kind of like with me with mushrooms, right? Early on, it was very high vibe and very powerful. And then it's like, okay, now we're going to go some deal with transmuting fears. And this is going to be much more challenging. And so, you know, I find that theory interesting. And I think there's, you know, there's so many layers of things that can affect everything in life. And, you know, this, I think the idea that we show up and are different each time. And as we move through layers of deprogramming and work, it may be just a different agenda, you know, for you that is, you know, sort of packed into your own, you know, DNA, if you will, an etheric body, as opposed to something that happened external to the substance, if you will.
I agree with that. That's definitely a possibility. Now, I said earlier I would back some of my arcane theories with some, you know, practical knowledge here. And one of the things that the shamans do, especially in Mexico, like the Mazatec shamans with the mushrooms, uh-huh. is they intensely purify them with incense before the journey. So my feeling is that they're getting all of that stuff off in case anything negative or bad came in contact with the plant medicine before the journey. And let's say like Maria Sabina, for instance, She's the famous Mazatec mushroom shamaness. You may have heard of her somewhere.
I feel like I have. She's a really well-known mushroom queen,
yeah.
Right? Yep.
Her image is all over the internet.
Yep.
I posted it on my Facebook blog even. But she would, if she went out to pick the mushrooms and anything bad happened, like a dead dog on the highway, dead bird, anything like that, she would abandon the trip.
Wow. Interesting.
So this is something I feel that the shamans know, that our intentions, our thoughts, our experiences somehow get programmed into the crystal quantum matrix of these plant medicines. And I'm you know, getting out here a little bit, but this is just something that I felt intuitively.
Interesting.
And then I thought, well, I can, when I start to lead my shamanic retreats later this year, I can actually work with these crystal extracts with like 528 hertz, Mm-hmm. You know, I have a live stream generator that I got in Santa Monica that generates radiant energy. And, you know, there's different things that can actually be, you know, programmed into these crystals that will actually, you know, when the experiencer starts to experience the plant medicine, they will also experience the extra steps that I took, you know, to make sure right. that the experience is a blissful, joyful experience. And I'm a believer that bliss and joy can actually be programmed into these crystals, into the crystal matrix of these plant medicines, so that you experience that and that you don't have a bad trip.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, I think it's almost like, you know, I always talk about why it's so important to do ritual, the power of ritual, because in putting your intention into anything, you know, we truly, you know, it's all, I think we'll get to the other side and find it was all placebo, because we are these powerful creator beings. So by putting, you know, intention into it and coming up with, as Bashar, the channel Bashar puts it, he calls it permission slips, right? And as we come up with permission slips, you know, to use our creative power to manifest certain experiences, you know, it makes it real. The more we go through, okay, if I do the X, if I do A, B, C, and D, then it's going to produce result E. If I believe that, you know, I create as I speak, abracadabra, right, is what it means. So I think that's a really cool thing and powerful thing to do.
Just telling people that you've worked with the plant medicine in that way is yep. going to increase the possibility yep. they have a joyful, blissful yep. experience 60 to 70%.
Exactly, exactly. Wow, yeah, I love that. Well, cool. So, you know, what else you got up your sleeve as far as hacks?
Well, I want to talk about meditation a little bit, since we, okay. you know, sort of dipped our toes in the water on that. Mm-hmm. I am a huge follower now of Eastern mysticism, you know, and I'm not the only one that started with psychedelics and got into Eastern mysticism. There's a couple names you may recognize, like George Harrison or Ram Dass.
Heard of those guys.
Yeah, pretty good guys there. So I'm a big believer in that, and my feeling is that these plant medicines, the most important thing that you want to do when using plant medicine is advance your spirituality. I mean, you know, if you're not doing that, I don't really feel like the plant medicines are working for you. Now, maybe right. I'm wrong. Maybe some people eat them like, you know, and go to a Tony Robbins thing and want to become more successful or make more money or whatever. I don't really see a great problem with that, but that's not how I would use them. I think,
right.
and I preach that, well, I shouldn't say the word preach, but I emphasize that in my book, that really you should be taking these plant medicines for, you know, the awakening process or spiritual evolution.
Yeah, agreed.
Yes.
Agreed. Well, I know you talk also about, you know, different consciousness technologies. Can you explain what you mean by consciousness technologies?
Great. I'm glad we went back to that, because that's one of the main hacks in my book. And, you know, that's one of the ones that I think people, my readers, are finding the most fascinating. In ancient cultures, plant medicines were used as consciousness technologies. And we've kind of forgotten that. And I've looked through, you know, all kinds of pre-Columbian photographs. And now that I've sort of awakened to this, I can see a lot more in these ancient, you know, art pieces that I never saw before. And one of the things that you'll notice, especially in pre-Columbian pieces, well, even going back to the Tassili shaman, you know, that's the one, the bee shaman that has the mushrooms sprouting out all over his body. Are you familiar with
that? No, I'm not.
That goes back about 9,000 years. And it's the earliest mushroom shamanic work or shamanic artwork that's ever been discovered. It's in a cave in Tassili Plateau in Algiers, I believe.
Oh, wow.
That's it. And one of the things I noticed looking at that ancient art is that they're actually depicting pranic bioelectricity around the crown chakra. Now, this is very similar to what we see in religious photos or religious artwork in churches where we see the halo around the crown. What's happening is there's an activation of this pranic, I call it divine source energy,
right?
You know, around the chakra.
Right.
And so this is a type of technology, because when you increase this energy that you're actually pulling in, you know, from the big quantum field of energy, you're pulling this energy in. In Tibetan Buddhism, it comes down through your crown. That's the practice that they do. They pull it down through the crown chakra. In Kriya Yoga, Paramahansa Yogananda's tradition, they pull it up through the medulla oblongata.
Right.
Well, this energy, when you can master it, you can do all kinds of things. You can bilocate. You can live to several thousand years old, like the ageless yogi Mahavatar Babaji. You can shapeshift into other animals, creatures. They do this in the Amazon now when they take on, you know, the form of a jaguar or, you know, some other animal totem, you know, that they do even in Native American cultures. So a lot of this consciousness technology has been lost.
Yeah.
And another thing that has been done for thousands of years in shamanism is hacking the quantum field of consciousness. And, you know, that's one of the things that I talk about in my book is how to hack the quantum field of consciousness with plant medicines. And this is something that Silicon Valley practitioners definitely should be interested in, because the next Google, the next Facebook, the next theory of relativity, you know, the next hit song, all this stuff already exists in the quantum field of consciousness.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Because there's been trillions of universes before this one. So, you know, there's like a universal oversoul that carries this information.
Right.
And if you get good at this, you can start to retrieve these revolutionary concepts. Even Paul McCartney said he dreamed the song yesterday that came from a lucid dream. Well, that means that song existed somewhere before, and he interpreted it. And sometimes even beings reveal this information. And I see these beings as like our soul is a bubble in the oversoul. And these beings are just a much larger bubble that don't have karma or sanskaras anymore. So they're advanced beings like us, but, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 being 1,000 years more advanced.
Right. Yeah. So this idea of, you know, consciousness technologies or bilocation, I've heard some accounts of this, you know, from time to time, and it's a really fascinating idea. And I even know some people who are having experience bilocating, not necessarily being in two places at once on this planet, but actually, you know, tapping into other timelines or you know, other lives simultaneously that feel as real as this. And that's a really fascinating, you know, concept.
That leads me to another hack in my book about how extraterrestrials travel. You know, you're talking about bilocating simultaneously from one place to another. Well, advanced extraterrestrials already know all this stuff and they're downloading a copy of themselves in an Earth-like planet halfway across the galaxy that has a similar electromagnetic field, which acts as a portal that propels them across the galaxy instantaneously, like by location, and they come through a similar portal on Earth, and they're actually living a second life, just like you know, the yogi that can bilocate instantaneously to Mars or the Moon or whatever, and then they can, you know, report everything they see or record everything they see, just like they were really there.
Wow.
And you know, a lot of people don't understand that either. And that knowledge has been lost. Ancient people knew all that. That's why they built their pyramids in certain, you know, electromagnetically charged areas, because pyramids were actually like downloading stations where you could go to the top and actually access these quantum fields to retrieve information or even contact these extraterrestrial or interdimensional entities.
Have you seen this? I saw this not too long ago and it was mind-blowing. I think I've got this right. The Pyramid of Giza is actually the coordinates upon which it sits is the exact same. The numbered coordinates is the same as light speed to the decimal. Have you ever seen this?
No, I haven't seen it. It's interesting. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. And I'm 99% sure I got that right. It's the big pyramid, biggest pyramid. And it's if you look at the coordinates where it sits and then you look at what is the number for light speed, whatever it is, it's exact same numbers written out. So
when you think about it, when you look back at Egypt, it's almost like looking back at another dimension. I mean, so many things that they did really don't make sense in today's technological world. And those crystal sarcophagi, you know, crystals, we talked about this earlier, hold vibrational information. So they're bringing in these, you know, sarcophagi that weigh tons that are, you know, riddled with crystals in the stone matrix. I mean, what are they doing with this? Like, is this, you know, are these actually teleportation pods? Are they able to dissolve their physical body in these sarcophagi and travel to some other planet or some other point in the galaxy where they came from? You know, I don't know. No one's really talking about this kind of thing.
Right. Interesting. So out of all the studies that you've done and, you know, all the information in your book, what is most exciting to you? What is the thing, you know, if you could share with the audience that, you know, they may find the most fascinating or interesting or most useful piece of wisdom that you've garnered on your, you know, multi-decade journey at this point?
Well, that's another very good question. You know, for me, it's really this divine source energy that's running through us right now. You know, how do we bask in this? How do we keep it moving through us to keep us happy and joyful and blissful? You know, it even slows down the aging process. You know, how do we get out of this fear-based, self-reflective, ego, resentment, anger, you know, this modality that we're in. Now we have this big virus thing where people are in fear and they're, you know, in the survival reptilian mind where they're mowing you over at the grocery store and all this stuff. And, you know, so for me, it's that. It's how do we basically stay in touch with our own divinity.
Right.
That's what excites me the most, actually, to be honest with you, Brandon, is our own godliness. That's
right.
And to me, that's the biggest conspiracy in the whole world. It's not the reptilians. It's not Bill Gates or the virus or the
right.
The banking people or this or that. That all is contributing to the darkness on the planet, but we're in a universe of duality, so there's going to be darkness and light. But the biggest conspiracy is how we're not focused enough on our own divinity.
Right. Yeah, it's like Ram Dass, I believe, said, treat everyone as if they're God and drag. You know, and if once you understand that's truly what's going on, and everywhere you go, you're there waiting for yourself, and it's all a reflection of you, and you start acting as if this is nothing but a giant feedback loop reflecting you back to you, and everything is happening for you and not to you, you now are on the, you are tapped into the perspective of higher self, of your expanded self, and you can really start leveling up your experience in the third dimension as you now bring your higher, more expanded self into 3D.
That's exactly it. That you hit the nail on the head right there. That's what excites me the most. And, you know, that's where you want to get, you know, and plant medicine's definitely the quickest way that I've encountered. I'm open to hearing other ways. We did touch on meditation a little bit. Meditation has been wonderful for me to keep that divine source energy running through. I think it's harder though for people that haven't had, a dozen to five dozen plant medicine experience. I think it becomes easier to move energy through your chakras, you know, after you've done a lot of plant medicine work.
Yeah.
But, you know, I still think meditation is something that we all should be doing as much as possible, you know, at least an hour a day if possible.
Right. Agreed. It's definitely, you know, as Osho, I believe it was, it said, I think everyone should meditate at least, 20 minutes a day, unless you're too busy, in which case you should meditate for an hour. So
that's a great spin. Yeah. He's amazing.
Yeah, he was one of those people, you know, of course, he got a pretty bad rap with the Wild Wild Country documentary. And I always say, you know, he was like all of us. He's here as a human evolving. And we got to be careful not to throw the baby out with the bathwater, because just because someone did something really screwy didn't mean they didn't also do something really great, you know. And so there's a lot of geniuses who have, you know, John Lennon, you mentioned the Beatles earlier, John Lennon, he is notoriously a poor father. He's also brought through some of the most inspired music in history, arguably, right? So there's, you know, a lot of cases of that sort of thing. I've even heard something similar said about Gandhi. So, you know, it's just, it's one of those things. I think it's really important to, you know, people are so quick to throw everything away if someone was out of alignment on anything.
Yeah, you know, even Terrence McKenna had some faults, you know, and watching him last night, I'm just amazed by his ability to convey his concepts. It's very humbling because I'm new at this, and I, you know, have trouble getting my words out, so I need a lot of practice, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to, you know, practice getting my material out there.
Absolutely. My pleasure. You know, one way I look at it is, you know, I like to have people who maybe are, you know, is really super well-known and really out there. And I also like to have people who have a very small following and are just coming up and helping to give them that confidence, like you said. And, you know, to me, it's, you know, it's all equally important. To give, everyone has a voice, and everyone, and the more you empower others, you know, the more you get empowered by others is the way I see it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And that's another thing that really excites me is getting this material out and sharing, and, you know, nobody has all the answers. You know, I learn things every day. Yep. And, you know, we all make mistakes. That's another thing, you know, you need to learn is self-love. All of us need to learn that, to forgive ourselves, you know, if we stumble a little bit. And you know, just remember that, you know, we are all in this together, and we do need to lift each other up and you know, remember our own divinity. That's going to be my slogan from now on. you know.
Beautiful.
Remember your own divinity.
Love that. I love that. Well, one of the things that I like to get on the show is I love stories of synchronicity or serendipity or positive paranormal stories. You got something interesting like that up your sleeve for us?
A positive paranormal story.
Yeah. Or a synchronicity story or just something that's sort of, you know, extraordinary or magical.
Yeah, I did have something with Terrence McKenna just a couple years before he died. You know, I told you him and I stayed in contact.
Right.
And I was really struggling with understanding novelty. And, you know, keep in mind, this was like 1998. Mm-hmm. And I had kind of a boring desk job in a big office complex out in kind of in the county in Missouri, maybe 10 miles out from St. Louis or whatever. And so I took a walk on my lunch break one day and I was just contemplating novelty, like, how do I understand this? And I saw this guy way up in front of me that was tall and skinny. He had all white on. He was very out of place because this was like a professional business complex where everyone wore suit and ties. And this guy had all white on and he looked like a, you know, somebody out of the circus or whatever. And I got closer to him and he had a very similar hairstyle and beard to Terrence McKenna. Mm. I thought, well, this is really strange. So I thought, well, I've got to get closer to him. Well, I had a very difficult time getting closer to him because I had to walk through some, you know, like some trees and things. It was kind of a park dash business complex thing. And I had trouble getting up to him. And then finally I caught up to him and he was sitting down and he was, I can't describe to you how out of place this guy was, the way he was dressed and everything. I walked by him and I looked and I saw Terrence McKenna's face on him.
Wow.
And I kept walking and I thought, oh God, I have to stop and talk to him. And then something kept telling me, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. You're getting some kind of higher lesson here and you can't talk to him. It may ruin the lesson. So I kept walking. And I said, oh no, I've got to talk to him. So by the time I turned around, he was already way ahead of me again. And I experienced the same thing where I had trouble catching up to him.
Wow.
We went back through the same woods or whatever. He got so far ahead of me. I got through the woods again and he was gone. And
wow.
I could not find him anywhere. I don't know where he went. And I thought, well, damn, if Terrence didn't teach me novelty this time, I don't know what novelty is. So, you know, that's kind of how magical he was. He could make things like that happen.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah, I've heard some stories of even, you know, some pretty fascinating stories of beings appearing and knowing all kinds of things about someone and getting you out of a sticky situation and then vanishing. And, you know, there's a lot of accounts of things like that.
Yeah. We live in a supernatural paranormal world. We have no idea of all the abilities that we have. A lot of it's been lost.
Yeah, well, and it's coming back, you know, thankfully.
Oh, yes, in a big way.
Yes, indeed. Well, this has been awesome, Rod. I for those who want to connect with you and follow your work and check your book out, and what is the best way to do so?
My book is on Amazon. It's called A Soul Hacker's Guide to Awakening. And I also have a website, www.quantumshamanics.com, quantumshamanics.com. And I have an author website. You can order my book right off of the publisher website too. It's rodnobleauthor.com, rodnobleauthor.com.
Awesome. Well, I do have one final question here for you, Rod, and it is this. In 60 seconds or less, what is the meaning of life according to Rod Noble?
This meaning to life. It's sharing this information with someone like you, Brandon, you know, and, you know, just doing whatever I can to help as many people as possible move forward on their soul evolution path or their awakening process. That's what it's all about for me. And that's what I'm going to be committed to for the rest of my life. And it's not about the money. It's not about you know, being popular, or, you know, I want people to follow me, or this or that or the other thing. It's just about helping people, and that's it.
And you never know who you're helping too, right? You could help one person and that could be more impactful, have a broader ripple of impact than helping a million. So I always say that to people out there who get caught up on like, oh, I'll never have, you know, the reach that Brandon does, or the reach that Oprah does, or the reach that, you know, you could, there's so many levels of influence, right? But you never know who you're influencing. Your 5-minute conversation at, you know, the coffee shop could be more impactful than all the work I do in my life combined. You don't know. And so, you know, what you do know is, you know, the path is the goal. And if you get aligned with your path and let go of your expectations or need for it to show up in a certain way, then you can really find your groove.
Yeah, that's it exactly. Yeah, it's so exciting, this work. And I want to thank you again for giving me the opportunity to be on your show. And, you know, hopefully we can do this again. Maybe I get a little better at getting my material out.
You know what? You are real and authentic and vulnerable. And that, my friend, is wisdom, and super appreciated. And it's been a real pleasure to have you on.
Thanks, Brandon. Really appreciate it.
Likewise. All right, everyone. Have a wonderful, wonderful now moment. Until next time, journey well.
Good night, everybody.
And if you're feeling the call to come for a week, retreat style, Mystic Manor immersion, remember to go now and book your time to speak with me directly about stepping into the optimistic vortex at calendly.com/talkwithbrandon while there are still spots left. Otherwise, I look forward to co-creating magic with you at the Mystic Manor.